And this is a premise now for everything, I mean, for every event that happens, there must be a previous state in which it follows in accordance with the laws of nature. If a spontaneous cause happens or begins, then there must be a previous state from which it follows causally in accordance with the laws of nature. A spontaneous cause is caused by a previous state in accordance with the laws of nature. Well, that's a contradiction in terms. Therefore, there can be no freedom in the world. Now, the crucial premise here is often misinterpreted, indeed misinterpreted by nearly everyone. The crucial premise is, for everything that happens, there must be a previous state from which it follows in accordance with the laws of nature. Nearly every single interpreter thinks that this refers back to the second analogy. But my principle of interpretation says it cannot be a restatement of the second analogy because the structure of the antinomy is based on transcendental realism. Therefore, I take it that that premise should not be taken as a statement of the second analogy, but should be construed as a principle that belongs solely to transcendental realism. Secondly,
thinking
about
the background thesis.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably
don't
know. Go on.
Okay. Second analogy, not first analogy.
Sorry.
Yeah. The event has had a cause to talking about. Secondly, in interpreting this, I take it that the claim that a spontaneous cause occurs in natural time. Spontaneous cause occurs in natural time, and therefore it must follow from a previous state in accordance with the laws of nature, is perfectly compatible with transcendental realism, which, remember, identifies appearances and things in themselves. So for transcendental realism, which assumes the identity of appearances and things in themselves, if there is a spontaneous state, it must occur in natural time, since there is, can be only one spatio-temporal whole for transcendental realism. All of which is to say, on my reading, that the antithesis depends on transcendental realism, and again, the principle of sufficient reason, and hence the crucial premise should not be read epistemologically. So the argument is that the is that spontaneous causality is incompatible with natural causality in that it is something we could never meet with in experience, which is to say that for even for the transcendental realists, the idea of a spontaneous cause cannot be determined to have a reference. So the crucial passage that gets people in all sorts of trouble in the antithesis A 445, 447, so it's the first continuation of that long right-hand column, and right roughly in the middle of it, Kant says, transcendental freedom thus stands opposed to the laws of the law of causality, and the kind of connection which it assumes as holding between the successive states of the active causes renders all unity of experience impossible. It is not to be met with in any experience and is therefore an empty thought entity. That's the passage that it tends to be read as coming out of the second analogy. My suggestion is that the reference to the unity of experience is not a premise of this argument, but what follows from its conclusion. It's because, again, spontaneous causality is incompatible with natural causality, that we cannot be an experience. So all the work is being done by the principle of natural causality, not by some Kantian premise. Okay, I think we need a deep breath here. We've done a lot. We'll try to pull it together, but let's have a deep breath.